You're listening to a recording from the Open Society Institute, working to build vibrant and tolerant democracies worldwide. Visit us at soros.org.
Hi, everybody, and thank you for waiting a few minutes. I'm Johnny Steinberg, the end of an Open Society Fellowship, I think you all know. And with me is Rufus Arkwe, who is one of the people I am writing about. Rufus's involvements and accomplishments are very broad and fluid and difficult to summarize briefly, but I'll do my best and do a quick introduction. Rufus came of age in Monrovia at a very significant time in Liberian history. In 1980, the Americo-Liberian regime that had ruled since 1847 was overthrown in a coup. And the early 1980s, Rufus, you and your late teens then, was briefly a time of aspiration, particularly for Liberian youth. And aspiration was very closely and seriously linked to soccer. And Rufus became a renowned figure in the eastern suburbs of Monrovia through his involvement in soccer as administrator and organizer, owner of a club, founder of a league. And that was very rooted in an important moment in Liberian history. He came to America in 1986 to study engineering, which he did at CUNY, and was intending to return home when the Liberian Civil War began in December 1989, and no one knew then that it wouldn't end until 2003. Rufus was living in Staten Island, and into his neighborhood in the early 1990s came hundreds upon hundreds of refugees from Liberia, among them young men and women whose schooling had been disrupted, who had been at refugee camps in neighboring West African countries, some of whom had fought as children in the war. And Rufus dropped what he was doing and refounded the soccer club that he'd founded in Monrovia. And then established branches wherever the Liberian diaspora was, in other American cities, in Ghana. And through that work, and perhaps what you're most interested in, has been in the last 15 years very involved in American institutions that deal with young refugees. The schooling system, where Rufus worked as a teacher bridging refugees into the American system. Colleges, Rufus has taken several young men and women, Liberian men and women through college. The justice system. There was a time when the police were profiling Liberians quite aggressively in Rufus' neighborhood. So in the last 15 years, he's seen the gamut of American institutions and how they interact with people in the refugee community. And with that, I'll hand over to Rufus. Over to you, Rufus.
Wow. Thank you, Johnny. I don't know what is left to be said. I think I wrote everything up in, except I will add on that settled on Staten Island, married for the last 23 years with four wonderful kids. Beautiful, wonderful kids. Two are into colleges. One is doing her master's in school psychology. And the other one has just entered doing accounting. I think that all you left out, Johnny. Yes. I'm happy to be here. Sorry for being a little bit late. Very, very much passionate about working with my people. Being West African, mainly Liberians, that have gone through a lot. And I came here as just a visitor, later began to study. And I was not fortunate at the time either to get a role model, to have somebody who would mentor me into the school system, say, go study this, you'll be helpful in that. Whatever we came with, whatever the vision was, let me learn, go back to Africa. Maybe after a while, they would point to me as one of the corrupt person, fine, but I'm a millionaire, you know? But it all changed. Coming to study as an engineer, I did study electromechanical engineering technology at CSI. I graduated, but if I had gone directly into that field, it would have only benefited I alone. I would have made a lot of money and not being able to come back. So I changed after graduation to do psychology, to just develop or enhance my ability to interact with people, understand them better, and see how I could refer them, point them to places they could get help. I graduated with a degree in psychology and became an advocate. And the bottom line is that if anyone here is familiar with Staten Island, you should understand it's a very different place. A fine place to live, but it's just different. It is just different. You have to ask for what you need. You have to request. You have to sometimes be seen as a noisemaker, as somebody who don't want to see in the room. Because advocacy is not something pleasing sometimes to authority. You may be asking for too much at a time. They're not willing to go into your direction. The school system in general in the city of New York has no plan in place to receive or deal with the wave of immigrant children into the school system. The cultural differences were something teachers did not understand, and they interpreted or misinterpreted it as special ed. They had all kinds of labor on our kids. I mean, that drove me more than anything. And for the first time in the history of District 31 on Staten Island, to have a teacher placed in a school that was predominantly minority kids, and out of the minority, majority of the minority came from West Africa, Liberia, and Sierra Leone. But that school had the highest number of placement into special education. I saw it as not understanding the kids. But after the advocacy, I was already in the school system teaching, but in Brooklyn, I was asked to go there. I went in that school in 99, the beginning of the school year, September. Within 2 years, the principal, PS 57 is the school to be very exact, District 31, the principal at the time, Edmond Deraka, became the principal of the year after 2 years of working with her for that district. Few things change. I openly challenged all, not some, but all of the referrers that were brought up to her attention to go through special education. For example, one time we had 51 students given by the guidance counselor, son, school based, oh, we have gone through this. These kids need to be tested. Let me see the list. I went through the list. At the end of the day, only 2 of 51 kids were sent to special education. And I say, let's fall back to that. How did you generate the list? We've done with who, when, but how did you get to the list? Involving the parents into the school system, coming for PTA and the rest of the thing. The school became better by improving the standard, the test, citywide test. The grades went up, attendance went up. And this is a school that had no recess, playing time for kids. I say it's a cultural business. When I went to elementary school, recess, we played. Whatever it was called, we played. We got dirty, it didn't matter. Sweat, it didn't matter. Go to class, go back to lesson. It's not being done here. They did it for the first time, I think, after 13 years. So a lot of things happened. The area changed and the school improved. Rosa Promotions Incorporated is the organization for which I'm the executive director. We have been blessed over the years to come through these doors before to be helped in our work. We highly appreciate it at the time. We lost a huge portion of our funding that made the work for me now a volunteering work, but I'm still heavily doing it. I still meet with the much older boys and girls that will be between 16 now and on. It's a range of things, a checklist I have for that group. I want to see if each one of them has social security card, green card, driver license, an apartment if you qualify. Are you ready to go to school? Do you have a relationship? How stable it is? And interacting with these young men and women across not just Staten Island, forming the soccer league, broad teams, soccer teams from Philadelphia, Trenton, Newark. Those are areas of high concentration of Liberian refugees. We play over the summer. Going through these young people, kickball and soccer, I have noticed that a lot of them lack these important things to keep them here. They may have, they could be eligible to get these things, but don't know how to go after them. So one-on-one, do you have it? Oh, you know, I know when I started here at the Grumble, I follow through, we get our license. I follow through to see who your girlfriend is, how's the treatment. We talk these things, and it is getting better. To find out, daily, the majority of these young men and women who came very young and have grown to these ages they are today, holding some level of responsibility in the community by working, doing whatever it is, about 98% of these young people did not go through any counseling to prepare them for the new life here. They manage themselves. They manage through the system. Some still cannot read and write to a level that will make them ready to enter college. So the challenge now for all of us is college may not be the way, but go do trade, Apex, Lincoln, and the rest of them. In short, I'm staying into this work, and that's where I think I will see myself doing for the rest of the time I have on life. As a way, I had to go back to school to improve in schooling at the master level in education. I'm at Nyack College Intensive. So I leave the house daily with my little daughter. She's doing master's too, I'm doing it, and we have to come home every day, share grades sometimes. I say, look, save that conversation, let's watch the CNN, you know. If it's getting too tired, oh, daddy, no, listen, A+. I says, good, let's, CNN is on, you know. But thank you for the A+. I will let you know mine when it starts to get better. Thank you very much.
Questions, comments? There are any number of directions to begin.
I recently worked with some Iraqi refugees who had come here, and the people that helped them to reintegrate or to settle here in the United States. And one of the comments or problems that was often mentioned was that Iraqis had unreal expectations of what to expect once they arrived in terms of what the U.S. government would provide to them or local government. Do you find that is also an issue for Liberian immigrants?
No. I don't know who would come as an adult to America with no expectation. They all come with. What I have seen as the difference, major difference, among refugee groups is who is here in America that's willing to assist. For many refugee communities, they already have established organization. And for one like me who took the risk, left going out to school to work with these people, I was blessed. Honestly, I was blessed. I have some bit of funding for a while. But funding organization will establish them to an extent to serve their people for a long time. What happened after a while is this. There are bigger organizations in the city of New York. Bigger organizations that will go into a neighborhood. And you know, openly I tell them, and it's not out of disrespect, I say, listen, if you come here between you and me, you and I, look, you will be quickly recognized, quickly accepted, for the work you do. But the bottom line of this work, you have limit to doing it. Your limit is your money. If the money runs out, you are running out. Try to establish enough people in this community to work with you. That has not happened over the years. So they all come with expectation, but there is not enough help to guide them through.
Steve.
Thanks. I'm Steve Hubble from the Fellowship Program. I guess what I'm most curious about is when the refugees that you've worked with arrive from what was in effect a war zone or an immediate post-conflict zone, yeah, how did they find the circumstances in Park Hill, in the housing projects in Staten Island? In other words, there are guns in both places, there's violence in both places, there are there is an uneasy dynamic between the police in one case and soldiers in another. There is a certain commonality of experience between African-American youth in Park Hill and the refugees, but I would think that those commonalities are superseded and outweighed by obvious differences. I'm just wondering how you broke down the steps, how you broke down the process of assimilation into discrete steps for the people you worked with, and what the cultural challenges, what the greatest cultural challenges were for the young people you worked with.
You know, like guys that came in the mid-90s, and this was very serious, a problem even with the police. Yes, they found themselves into violence. But I think I had a lot of conversations and open forum where I spoke to African Americans and said, listen, what you do here is not even 10% of what these guys have experienced. Stop challenging them. It didn't take any time, they found out really quick. Because they're bringing these pistols to these guys from the war, these were toy guns. The Liberian form their own gang. Now, they wanted to establish to the African American, we are tougher. It became bloody. And by 96, the 120 prison had the highest number of juvenile arrests across the city. The commander told me at the time, 96, 97, because of the refugee. They went off. Now, I met the commander and said, look, let's address this. It became so confusing to the police that their approach was very ugly. I stood in the way one time. I said, try. I'm one of them. Why will you leave me and go to him? I'm one of them. Arrest. He did not arrest me. But I followed the car. One example, a minivan, caravan, just pulled up, and I was blessed to be standing right there that day. Shh. I think four guys jumped out of the cars. They were all undercover cops. Young guys standing in front of the building, hands on the wall. You know, these guys put their hands on the wall, and I was standing. I'm in that era. You won't know I'm not living there. I'm there every day. He searched them. And he decided to take two in cuff. And I walked to the van. I said, what did they do? Oh, they fit a profile of people we're looking for. What is that profile? He couldn't show the profile. We have it. We don't have to show it to you. I said, okay. They drove off. I drove behind them. They went to the prison. I went to the prison. And I requested, I insisted to speak with the commander. I said, listen, this has been going on for very long. Say, oh, Rufus, they stand in front of the building. The neighbors don't want to say there's no crime in any bogey that you cannot stand in front of your building. If this is where they have chosen to stand this day, they have the right to stand there. I don't care how many of them they are. They're not gathering for demonstration. This is where they live. They're standing in front of their building. Is that illegal? or have you profiled this group that now you can't stay in front of the building? It has to stop somewhere. Work with us to stop it. And I was, to my surprise, it got to one police plaza, and I had a visit from one liaison community affairs person. Said, okay, let's work. We did something called Shoot Hoops, Not Gun. And they demonstrated something. The kids acted like they were the cops, and the cops acted like they were in the street. We build up a relationship. We build up some kind of common understanding. That attitude, pick up and move, stop. And at the end of that, it was clearly made to mean that we do this every Friday afternoon to intimidate kids that have no reason being here. When we take these kids on Friday afternoon, evening, they stay in jail till Monday. But that has stopped. I knew it was wrong to do, find another way to deal with these kids than putting them in jail Friday, getting them out Monday as a way of keeping a safe area. That has changed. And I met with the NAACP president one time, one-on-one, I looked in the face. I said, the toughest resistance we faced in America came from you, African American. You know, he stared for a while. Said, you have never accepted that we are one. We came here at a different day, a different time, through different means. You need to be the source for which we come to for help. But you have challenged us. You have made us look bad to every person. You are not far or different from us. We are closer now. Things have changed. I have recruited a lot of African Americans on kickball team and on soccer team. We have exposed them to eating our food, and I'm seeing a higher level of intermarriages, and all of the clubs I have, they're there. It has improved. It's getting better.
Rufus, I meet Liberian teenagers who have lived in this country since they were 2-3 years old, or even born here, with very thick Liberian accents. I meet Liberian kids who've been here 4 years with thick American accents. Some have both. Some speak in Liberian accent when you're in the room, and American accent when you're out of the room. What's going on there? What choices are kids making? What are they juggling with?
I mean, wherever they are, whoever they feel they're communicating with, and how they should communicate to make it clear, that's it. Well, it will always be lovely to maintain a Liberian accent, always. You know, it's a big joke if you leave from America, going back to Liberia, and try to speak an American accent. You are the laughter of the town. They'll laugh at you. So whatever we do, we try to stick to it somewhat. If I can mix my whatever American little bit accent with the African accent as they have and feel that you are understanding me, I'm good.
I'm Herb Sturz with the Open Society, senior advisor. And I'd like to follow up on we call it stop and frisk, stop, question, and frisk that you were referring to. The police throwing kids against the wall, putting them from Friday to Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And has that, you say that has stopped? Or has
yeah, stopped? It stopped. It stopped. Stopped.
It stopped. Stopped for whom? For Liberian refugees or just broadly the
no.
African-American population?
It stopped in general. It stopped. I don't see that going on.
No, I think as a matter of fact, it hasn't stopped in New York.
Okay.
There are about, this year, there are over 600,000 stop and frisk cases. And but it's interesting that you perceive that it has stopped in your area in Staten Island. And we can be interesting, we can check the data on that.
Yeah.
But it's a very big problem. Because it is the police would say it is not profiling, but they would say this is where the crime occurs, and the Friday to Monday I don't quite understand with that an arrest being made, but it's interesting and I'm delighted that it has stopped in your neighborhood, as it were.
You know, if they suspect and they are still groups of drug dealers, some Liberians, no joke, they're in the area, you go among them, guys, you have to stop, and I'll take the risk, I stand with them, you know. You have to stop what you're doing, it's wrong, at the end of the day, you'll be in jail for long, or you'll be killed, you know, you have to stop it. So, in that group, if the police come and say, they know where the guys are, they go and do that, that's fine. But before, I mean, just where a group of people stand, teenagers, and good kids, they would just, especially the males, they would just bring the van and they carry it on. So if I see this stop going on now, look, I know this kid has been doing something continuously. It's now where we here trying to play, or the kids trying to play, and they bring the van, you know. And look, wherever I am, I see a police just hanging around, I'm still coaching. I will leave what I'm coaching, sir, yes. We are this group. Are you looking for anyone in particular? So no, I'm just trolling. Then I know they're safe, and we'll go back and play.
Hi, I'm Katie Trell. I'm in the Office of Grants Management here, and I just had a question about, in terms of the work that you're doing with the young refugees, how are you seeing that work impact the rest of their families? I don't know if they necessarily came here with mothers and or fathers or extended family or sisters and brothers. How are you seeing, you know, the positive impacts of your direct work with them kind of go out to the rest of the community?
They will be in category per se. When we had a community center, we had adult literacy for the parent. Mainly, most of the kids again are from single parent home. And one parent here is responsible for long line of relatives in Liberia. They stay long hours working. When we meet, I tell them, you have to grow faster, stronger, better to be able to help your mother, to be able to help your siblings. It is that. So the effect in homes, you will see that young men, young women will go to school, graduating, getting jobs, coming home, they help their parents. Like, which Johnny used to visit our meeting. It used to be every Friday. Now I'm in school, we cut it to every other Friday. 35 to 40 young men and women in this cold time we're meeting, preparing for summer. We don't meet that often in the summer. We go out and just play. And these are the things we talk about. Sometimes the meeting is very controversial. And having served in the community too also as a teacher, I'm in their homes. I see it. So, you know, it's two ways. I've gone and argued with some parents, say, look, you are abusing your kids. If you can't change in 3 months, I will call the authority on you. You know, you're not providing proper lodging. You have this space, you intend to use it for other means, you know. You have the time, you're using the time for other purposes. Like, you go into a party, you have a 14-year-old girl, I see you this dress. Where is her clothes? How you dress so well, and you know, you're in my wife's home, it's catching up with her. Whatever she's doing, I'm sitting, pretending like I'm doing something, but I'm watching. Oh, you, what's about Lucilia? So if you miss this, get that, just so the parents can somehow interact with the children, they will grow together. It's an effect.
So I'm Lenny Bernardo here with the Fellowship Program. Can I ask a couple of things? First, the Truth and Reconciliation report that came out earlier this year. I'm just curious, any commentary about how it has been received in different ways with the community, and the degree to which President Sirleaf Johnson, has in some cases lost perhaps some of her luster, some of her legitimacy in Liberia, whether that has all been translated it into the community on Staten Island as well, sort of more mixed feelings or kind of divergent approaches about her presidency.
Yes, on that, I have promised the community to call a town hall meeting about it. and now we have to do it just around the Christmas time, or right after the Christmas. They have been looking up to that. But that's a very big political business. And Liberian culture in as it relates to politics is this. I don't care about what you people are doing now. Let me continue hustling to keep my family. Something controversial that has extreme has to develop before Liberians are, you know, move to get involved. It has to be very bad, very good. Really happy, wedding party, really sad, wake. In between, they don't care. This, they don't care. Now, for those of us who are looking at it politically, socially, I care. And I'm linked with the National Liberian Organization. I'm linked to it. And for my community, I have to. Like before the 2005 election, I made sure I invited a lot of the candidates on Staten Island to meet the people, including Ellen Johnson. They all came, we sat, they talked, they met the people, they've gone. The truth and reconciliation issue is a big issue to me. I don't know how far my feeling will go through the society, but that has to be adhered to. There was a by-election in Monrovia that just went on last week, Tuesday. It has a lot to do with this. If it is left with the Salib government, I am very sure she doesn't want to talk about TRC. She has to make it active to an extent for the legislature to debate on it and make it a law. She's not willing to do it. If she agrees to it, it's going to bring down the ruling party for the next election. And we are saying for the laws in Liberia to be respected in the future, you as a sitting president must respect this one. That's my thinking about the TRC recommendation. We took part in it, and we agree that whatever will come from it will be accepted by your government. And for now, there's a lot of delay tactic. And it's very, very sensitive to the future of Liberia.
Then you had another question?
Hi, my name is Benaifa Naroji. I currently work on East Africa, but for a decade during the war, I worked on Liberia for Human Rights Watch. I was a human rights researcher. The first time I went was 1989, 2 weeks before the NPFL invaded, and then I went back throughout. I'm just curious to know if the kids here in the U.S. are following the Charles Taylor trial, and if that message of accountability for violence, for crimes, is in some way coming out of The Hague and out of Sierra Leone into Staten Island in any way?
With the kids, I almost say no. I haven't heard it as a conversation. Like I said, it has to be on the extreme. Taylor time is over to an ordinary young Liberian. His time is over. He's gone. That's how I think it's saying his time is over, they're hoping. But if The Hague lets Taylor out, he will be the most popular politician in Liberia. That much the kids know. Now think about it. I don't know what that, how that is interpreted, but he will be. And as much as he's very unpopular with older people, the kids, very. By force, I got what I wanted. It's something in the head of the kids. And it's something in the head of our great parents. It's something in the head of every Liberian growing as an adult that's educated, that's dressed like this. This is a symbolic dress. This means something. This is how it is. And if you look at the history of Liberia, you cannot ignore the growth of that country. You cannot ignore the role of the American-Liberian on the indigenous people. That cannot be ignored. That's playing a big, big, big thing in how Liberia will be shaped in years to come. It has been taught to kids that to be appreciated, you must fight. It is the same thing we're trying to avoid in the Ellen Johnson Sirleaf government. Respect the law. Agree to the TRSC recommendation. Do all you can do to make it work. Your time has come. If it is over, let it be over. Not forcefully be over.
I'm Vicky Litvinov with the Russia Program. And just to bring it back to the work you're doing in Staten Island, you've talked about a lot of these programs that you're directly involved in and that you've spearheaded. What I'm wondering is, the kids that you've seen come through the program now who are a little bit older, if you could talk a little bit about where they end up, whether any stay to take on mentorship roles as well, work with other younger kids.
Yes. And even today, I gave a particular kid, I know you've met Jerry. Jerry came in 98. He played on the under-19 soccer team. We came second place in the city. And by the way, we won the city statewide championship in 96. The same kids from the refugee camp got together, through soccer. Jerry graduated. He built our website. Now, to get him to update it is another challenge, but it's up. Tia was in New Jersey, was in jail regularly, in a lot of trouble. I brought him. He's a good soccer player. I recruited him from Newark. I brought him over Staten Island, found a place for him. Helping with employment, helping into college now. I have to tutor him, mentor him, whatever it is. Tia is back. He helped me coach the little girls' team. I got a lot of that. Those who can come back. There's a young man in the military now in Korea. He just sent a brand new set of uniform for them. Like when I put on the internet, look, guys, we need to collect $25 to get something done. Those who are not here, we send their money that quick. So it's a big, big, big connection. As we speak, through the same Rosa, a young man, I don't know if you ever got a letter from or invitation from Eddie Kingston. He played for us under 19. He played professional. He went to college. He graduated before going to professional. He played on our national team. He's back. I just worked with him. I got nice something to go back to Liberia launch to recruit and give opportunity to children there to come here to school. So I'm seeing it coming back. I'm seeing it coming back over and over. You know, it keeps me looking young. They all come, we all joke around, and we joke. You think it's a comedy club when we meet. A bug of his joke, just to make them very comfortable and appreciate it. Yes, we are seeing a big number of returns. They go out of here in other parts. Like, we have to extend our hands in other areas where Liberians live. I depended on people that I worked with. In as much as I joke around, they know what I need. They know the line I laid. I want to see this happening. Let's work towards it. We all work and we see it. So they know. And they went out in Kansas City, Minnesota, Newark, organized themselves. Rosa Inos era playing soccer. Wherever they go, they come back somehow. Yes. When we're getting married, I got to be MC at wedding. I go, we all traveling to Minnesota. One of our players now is a big man there. He's getting married. I have to be the MC. I have to go to that one. One got married this summer. I have to go, you know, like that. But I'm happy to see them grow. So when there's problem in a relationship, they call me and they know me for being very fair, you know, hey, what he wants, give it to him, when he wants it, give it, what she wants. You know, like, just joking around, but at the end, and I'm a living example of a lot of them, and I've kept mine for 23 years, you know. My joke to all of them about relationships, say, if there's one reason God will look at to send me to heaven, will be that I've kept a Liberian woman for 23 years. That's enough of a reason to go to, you know, just a joke. And they all laugh. So keep yours. You may join me in heaven by keeping your wife along.
Hi, I'm Bipasha with the fellowship program as well. You seem to come back to this theme of sports as a unifying factor, not just for bringing in African Americans into the Liberian community, but also within the Liberian community, create a sense of ethic, ethos, community, and a way to bring youth back into contributing to the community. What can you share with us as far as the power of sports when it comes to, like, are there lessons that can be drawn from this for bigger, wider immigrant communities across the country, African-American communities? But, I mean, sports have been talked about as a way to bring youth, make them more participatory in communities. But is this something that you can see as a way to be replicated in other contexts?
Any day, anytime, anywhere. I don't care how tough kids are. They will sit this quietly, attentively, and listen to the coach. They could be at the highest level of special education, lowest level, whatever. They will sit in their seats to listen to the coach. They want to play. This is where they explore the talent. This is where they show who they are. This is where they are at their best. And if you appreciate them there, you can take them any other place. They will listen. So, I mean, whatever it is I do, even working with parents, I have an old-timer club. We all go on a weekend, summertime, see our stomach lapping over. Let's play. You know, after the game, I'm not playing for more than 20 minutes any longer. You know, when I'm coaching, it's different. But to play, I'm not, you know. Then I'm a certain age, you know, limit. You have to be 35. When I see a kid that is 30, no, you got to be 35. If you're under 35, you got to wait for the younger guys, you know, like that. We play, you know, after playing, we sit down. It's politics of Liberia. So it's the same with kids. Everywhere I've gone, you know, shh. You want to make the team? Yes. And the way I do mine, for example, we have a brand new van, 15-seater. We used to travel. Summertime, Atlanta, North Carolina, Massachusetts, Boston, Maryland, Virginia. We in Philadelphia. We got nowhere to go. Run straight to Philadelphia. Easier to go to a lot of teams. We are traveling. Girls and boys, kickball. It's fun. When we had fun, the organization paid for everything. So you had to earn the trip. Earning for a young kid would be, let me see the report card. Come on, you want me to get in trouble? You failing? You want me to take it? No. Come on, man, do better. Do better. You know, then how will you do better? Come for tutoring. So suppose we attract. And for Liberia, doing the bitter part of the war, when everything was breaking loose, whenever there was a soccer game, nobody knew there was war in the country.
I was struck that the only memorial that had been put up after 10 years of war was a statue of George Weah, the soccer player.
That's it. Soccer? Kickball and soccer. They will come. And that's why the elections in Liberia were tough. The guys, George, and we grew up together, we played together. It threw me. He bought a home on Staten Island. He helped me form Rosa, organize Rosa here. He's with me. He's right now very upset about the election, but it'll be all right. We're getting to that point. When he decided to participate in politics, that was it. The young people saw soccer, sports, would change their lives. not another thing. Sports. He's not educated. We don't care. So right now, CDC, which is the soccer party per se, has more people in the Liberian legislature than any other political party. And the next election, I'm not going to predict here, but it will even get better. He's a soccer guy.
And I'm wondering, are girls and women included in the teams, or are there separate teams for girls and women?
Let me look at here. I organized the first and only soccer team for African girls across the United States. It was the first of its kind on Staten Island. What it did, trains girls that play in the high school soccer in the 2001 up to 2005. All of the high schools on Staten Island had girls playing on their team that I trained. All. And at least out of six high schools, five had their most valuable girls player coming from the program. And what it did, all of those girls stayed together. At some point, they broke away, and I brought them back two years ago. In Staten Island, when you are up to 15, you can't play in their league. It's up to 15 years. You must now go into Cosmopolitan League, and that requires a lot of traveling. I didn't have the help to do it, so I let the girls go. They went back to the high schools. What now I've done with them, we always used to meet when I was coaching little kids. So what are you going to do for us now? I said, I don't have the energy to do anything extra. You guys are older now. What I did, I said, come back. What can we do? Use your time now to do something else, not to play soccer. There's no age group for you to play it on. So we organized what we call the Ladies of Prestige. Now, there are about 17 girls. Only one is not in college. She went and she dropped. She didn't drop because of academic reason. Papers were not correct. So, and she's the president of the group, the one girl that went to college and left. They understood why. All of these girls are in colleges. On the break, we all meet. And what that group is challenged with now is, the aim there is, recruit each person, bring two other girls between 9 and 12. You mentor them. This is how we're doing it. So I don't have the resources. I don't have the time to recruit girls' team again. For Liberia, I brought girls together in Liberia, and they won the national championship in kickball 2003. The champion team in Liberia in 2003 was Rosa. Come together. You can do it. Kick the ball. You can do it. I got a coach. We did it before I left. They were good at it. Whoever I left, the system I left in place, carry it through. In Ghana, I went to the refugee camp. We had girls. Kickball, the girls will do. To teach girls soccer, I would say as a warning, you got to be younger with a lot of spare time, and you have to have the strongest headache tablet around you always. It's a serious headache, even when they are playing. In the middle of the game, I will see girls sitting in the middle of the game. The opponent has the ball. They're doing something with the nails. The game is on. They're doing something with the hair. They're forcing on the same team. You know, like, so it's, but I love it. I did it for 4 years. I would do it again if I had the resources, young people to back me up. It's nice, really, but it's a lot of headache. No joke. I see why now there are not many girls' teams around. It's a lot of headache. But it's something you, when you do, it stays with you for the longest. You love it. The girls get glued to you. They get glued to you. I'm enjoying the benefit of it today. Thank you.
I'm Lee Hollingby from OSI Library. So I just wanted to stay with the theme of girls for a minute, please. So how are girls doing in general in your community, not just in sports, but I was wondering if you have any problems with high rates of teenage pregnancy or other factors like that which could hold girls back in their education. I know in general in the United States there are more men and more women in college now than there are men. Do those patterns show up in your community where girls seem to be higher achieving educationally?
Yes.
Or also I was wondering, was the police problem strictly a problem with boys and not with girls to stop and frisk?
No, not with girls. Not with girls. In the 90s, I saw teen prostitution, strictly. That I saw. The kids that came from the war, I saw that. Now, you come in 2000, girls that never had attention paid to drop out of school and started to work. You know, the breakdown of families is a very serious problem. I remember my daughter was friend with one girl, her cousin, like, it was difficult for this girl in high school, but she managed even to graduate. The day before graduation, she came to my house, and I saw her eyes red, but she was talking to my daughter, you know, what's happening? My daughter said, no, she will not graduate. I said, what? She failed. She has to go somewhere. I said, oh, something else will go wrong with this girl if she doesn't graduate from, if she doesn't participate in this. And I was blessed to know the principal firsthand. I hope if any editing is done, let it be this, that I call, I beg, that let her graduate for her esteem. She marched. The principal listened, accepted. She walked with her friends. We managed. My daughter did not go to college without that girl. Said, Daddy, whatever we can do, she will fit in some program. And yes, I found her a school that took her upstate. My wife and I bought what she needed to take with her, laptop, television, refrigerator, just like she saw my daughter go. And she went the next year, but she went. She's there, and she's refusing to ever drop. She stayed in there. Whenever she's down, she's in the house, you can see her growing. That makes me feel good. She's no more the, you can see the withdrawnness in these kids. That they're lonely, they know they're not appreciated, they have to use their body as the means of earning rather than using their mind. You can see her now participating. We went to a meeting this gone Friday or something I wanted the leaders of prestige to do. So you know what, I'm presenting something to you. I don't think I'm going to give you too much of room of alternative here. This is what I want us to do. This girl was the one that said, she calls me Uncle Rufus. Uncle Rufus, we're not going to do it. I said, why? A, B, C, D. I said, all right. Okay. In that room, I did not say anything back to her. I had the power to, but because she said it, I said, okay. Go back and work on it and come back with another version that will include part of my idea. And they came back with another version. But I mean, it built a self-esteem, but the family structure. So the ladies of prestige are doing more. Two girls went to Howard in Washington area. I saw them pull another girl there with them. They're going. When we meet, we talk book. We talk education. And three meetings ago, I exactly what you said. I threw it out, and I warned the kids. I'm going to say something you may not like, but sit for it. The girls are doing better than you boys in education, maintaining a job, being patient to hang around with you. They're being a lot of patient. You guys need to catch up. Go to school. Go to trade school. When you get a job, try to stay with the job. So yes, but it's getting better, I know.
Any one last question before we close? Perhaps I'll ask one more. you mentioned Jerry, and I think I'm talking about the same person. I was in your center long ago in 2007. where a young man stood up and described watching the murder of his father. And you said at the time he'd been there 8 years and he hadn't spoken a word of it. This came out of nowhere. How?
Isaac. That was Isaac.
Was that Isaac?
Isaac.
How?
Yes.
How do you deal with that in Rosa? I mean, that's the legacy of Rosa. There are people in Rosa with those experiences.
And that's. Luckily, you attended a forum. I call these meetings sometimes and say, let's talk about this. And I try my best to invite professionals that will know how to deal with it. You saw the room. You saw how many people spoke. People talking about their parents or relatives being raped. A lot of things were said there. You know, I set it up and I listened myself. And this is how they talk about it. You saw how emotional that room was. You saw how they cried. Some of them haven't had a chance to cry about this. It's in them. They act in Manchu in other areas, but they're suffering in some places. You saw it. And I think it made the New York Times cover front page, that particular meeting we had. It was on the front page of New York Times. It was Jerry and his sister on the front page. Yep. So, I mean, whatever it is, we try to. You know, some will be willing to, like, for example, issue like relationship. It's a very serious thing. I pronounced it quite a few times, you know. How are we doing? And when it's all boys, they go out. They speak their mind. And in some cases, people they don't have people to listen to them. Only in those forums, they have the time. And I let them just say it, you know. You ask them a question. They speak. You know, Isaac is there, and in fact, it is his apartment now we use for the meeting. He has a big, wide space apartment, real big, and up to 30, 35 people will be in our living room, crowded. So, not this Friday, next week Friday, 7 o'clock, we'll be there again. Every other Friday, we're there. You know? So Ozzy has healed to a point where he's one of our major help. He's the head soccer coach for the older guys team. He makes financial contribution. He's on the field coaching. Look now, you offer his place for us to hold meeting. You know. They talk about it. They deal with it, you know, somehow.
Well, Rufus, thanks for getting on the ferry and coming uptown to see us.
Yes.
Appreciate it.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for giving me the opportunity. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.